All right, hey guys, Ron Newcomb here with the Indie Coach. I'm excited to have you all here. I just wanted to talk briefly to kind of lead you in, as this is one of the early episodes on the difference between kind of a coach and a mentor and what the intent of coaching is and why I chose that path. Really, the coaching element is really a short-term impact and what I really had my whole life. I've had, growing up playing sports, it's always held during these short periods of time, and I've had incremental growth during those times. And I thought, what better way to try to get back and have a voice in that conversation than to try to meet with people that are excelling in their specific areas and try to focus in on what they're doing to excellence and try to see if we can achieve some and garner some nuggets from them to be able to put practical application in, to try to put pen to paper, to put down real world examples, to allow us to be able to move the ball forward in our own lives. We all kind of feel the longing to have a mentor, but those are really those long-term kind of goals. We all want that. I want that. I've kind of searched for that my whole life. Actually, my dad has obviously served a really good role in that capacity. But this coach element, I realize, are these really kind of in and outs relationships that I've had along the way that I think are really good. And that's what I really think a podcast can be. It's kind of these short-term relationship things that can come in, hit you really good in a specific way, in a niche element, and then kind of for you to be able to take it and apply it back to your life and for you to have incremental growth in those areas. A coach is not really an expert in all things, but they can speak to what has worked for them and what they know to be true. And from a coach, we can create action plans and get skills to overcome challenges to work towards achieving our specific goals. And quite honestly, I'm doing this very selfishly because I have found myself in a place where I really want to try to find that information. And yet I find myself at that age where I really should be kind of giving back and offering that element of coaching back. And so I want to try to do that. And so I predominantly have done it historically through the lens of indie film coach. But as a filmmaker, I really expanded my artistic element into a storyteller. And so I went beyond the reach of filmmaking and then now I have gone into other areas like games and books and things of that nature. So I have this quest to contribute to this artistic conversation of coaching in the area of artists and as independents and what that entails. My goal really is to walk away with you feeling informed, inspired, and really giving some good information that you might take away with you on this journey. So I wanted to kind of dive in with our guests. And instead of me reading a bio, I wanted to be able to just talk to Zan, who's become a really good friend of mine, and I believe is doing some things to excellence in his area. And I'm grateful that he accepted the invitation to come onto the podcast and kind of talk to all of us a little bit of what he has going on. So Zan, thanks a lot for joining us. And as you kind of give your little introduction, can you tell us a little bit how you started your company, Fill and Fair?
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Ron, for having me on. It's an honor. This is, it's funny, as you know, we've been working together in some capacity for probably 7 or 8 years now. And I appreciate the opportunity to, where you have been my coach over the years. There's been different times where you've been able to speak in and I value that personally. So I just wanted to say, I appreciate that too. And thank you for the role that you played there. So when it comes to starting Fell and Fair, it was, like you said, it's a passion for storytelling. I don't know that I could have said that. I don't know that I could have verbalized that 15 years ago. I loved movies. I loved film. I participated in theater and student film and all that sort of stuff growing up and absolutely loved it. Enjoyed watching film, enjoyed playing with toy soldiers in the backyard, every step of that process. And one of the reasons actually my first career move actually after graduating college was to join the Navy. And one of my big motivators there was I wanted to be part of this big story, part of this big bit of history that's been going on for hundreds of years that has impacted world history, that has changed the fate of nations. And I wanted to participate in that. And I'm very grateful for the opportunities I had there. But while I was there, I still liked telling stories myself. So I started an Instagram account called Fell and Fair. which comes actually from a J.R. Tolkien quote. It's from The Two Towers. They're first just describing the Riders of Rohan, and as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Anglo-Saxon, the Riders of Rohan were always kind of felt like they were my people, you know. So the phrase or the sentence that Tolkien uses to describe them, he just talks about Éomer, their captain, their leader, who's riding ahead of them. And then he says, after him, they rode a long line of mail-clad men, swift, shining, fell and fair to look upon. And I really liked that kind of my 22-year-old self, I loved that kind of contradiction and yet complementary element of fell and fair. Fell meaning dangerous, deadly. In the context of warriors good at their job, they were good at fighting. But then fair meant noble, beautiful, good. And so I love, you know, that the idea that we as warriors, we as people, we as, because I was in the military at the time, but we as artists should be able to tackle the hard things and do really, really, you know, wade into difficult situations and manage those well with strength and courage, but also be noble and good and beautiful and honorable and promote those things as well. So that's why I chose the name for my Instagram account. Given how hard it is for people to say and remember, if I was going back and branding something, I probably would have chosen something a little more, not as archaic in terminology, but it's worked out for us. And we just started an Instagram account, basically journeying or documenting our journey as we learn to create costumes, as we learn to do storytelling photography and then films and that sort of stuff. And then as it's grown, we started having more and more demand for the costumes that people were seeing in the photos. So we launched a retail costume side. So that's shop.felonfair.com. And that is our retail line. So our ranger outfits and knight outfits and Viking outfits and Rohan outfits. You can kind of get the basics of the building blocks of those items there. And most of this was stuff that I really wanted, but I couldn't find somebody else that was making it. There's lots of great manufacturers of a lot of great equipment out there. But when it came to handmade, high quality material garments, that's just not something I could get. So I had to make. And then we started, you know, building a market for that. But then people got all these great kits and they started saying, you know, hey, can we come hang out with you guys, do an event, do a photo shoot, something like that. And we were kind of like, that's not really what we do. We don't really have the bandwidth for that. And then when the Four Studios reached out to us in 2016, 2017, with the idea of hosting a live event, Weekend Warrior, we jumped on that, and kind of the rest is history when it comes to Weekend Warrior. And then we launched into our live events. And obviously we've done Weekend Warrior for 7 years, including multiple, what we call our training grounds events in the spring. And then this coming year, we're launching into two new events, the Hearthlands, which is a Hearthguard specific Viking-esque event. And then we have War of the Barons, which is a 13th century England, more historical, we're calling it a medieval mill sim event. So a military simulation of this kind of medieval time period. We've also launched our Party of Special Magnificence, which is kind of our halfling birthday party that we celebrate every September 22nd or so, depending on whatever the closest Saturday is. And so that's really helped kind of create this fully rounded community that creates content and makes videos and tells stories that way, that tells stories through clothing, tells stories through providing whether the clothes we make for ourselves or the ones that we provide people so that they can tell their own stories. And then we host the events where people have the opportunity to participate in this larger story, where they can have their own smaller story in it, and gives them a new context to explore things about themselves, to explore things about the world and about community. So that's just been it's not the track I planned. It's not what I would have said I thought Fell and Fair would be doing in, you know, 8 years or 10 years or whatever. I guess we started, I started the business 9 years ago, started the Instagram account 13 years ago. So not where I thought we'd be going, but here we are, and I'm very grateful for it.
So I'm assuming that it was not from the get-go a business plan idea of to do an Instagram. It was you and your friends getting together to kind of showcase these photos. And you, since you guys do it to excellence, suddenly you find yourself, hey, let's really have our kits established and looking cool. And then you kind of show up and it's like, well, hey, what are we going to do? You can't just do these, you know, let's just stand around and do some poses. It's like, no, let's kind of have these epic scale photo elements. And when I always was describing Fell and Fair, I was like, because I was a fan first before we ever met each other. And I was like, you know, they do these stories in one picture. And that's the way I would articulate it. And then people are like, what's that? And then when they would see it, they would go, oh, okay, cool. I get it. Because it looked like a whole story was played out in this one image. So yeah, just kind of thinking through kind of the business plan idea of from conception, starting the Instagram account, and another follow-up also, what made you choose Instagram? Was it just that was kind of the flavor of the day, or was there some intentionality behind that?
Yeah, no, it was very much just, I would say, accidental, except obviously it wasn't. But the process was, and to answer the first part of the question, I was planning to stay in the military for 30 years, become an admiral, and retire. I was not planning on getting medically retired at age 25 and never flying again. And so really what it was for me was I had been involved in a really amazing community through high school, college, that sort of stuff. And so kind of being moved around the country by the Navy all the time during flight school and that sort of stuff, I didn't have anybody to express any sort of artistic anything. And when you're working that hard, you have to have some sort of outlet, some sort of hobby, some sort of expression. So Instagram was kind of just big on the scene. This was Instagram early days was really about photography and sharing art. And, you know, Facebook was the social network. Instagram was this is where photographers and artists and potters and blacksmiths would talk about and share their process and what they were doing and that sort of stuff. So it was the very natural kind of fit for somebody who had an eye for photography and who, you know, had a visual art medium that they could share. And so honestly, a lot of it was sharing my progress pictures, the stuff I was making at the time. And then we had a bunch of screenshots and a bunch of images from previous projects we had done. And I would kind of share those as showing, oh, this is what I made. I made this bracer, or I made this thing. And because those were screenshots from movies, they often by their nature told stories because there was a written story being told in that image. And I kind of thought about it like an illustration. So because we often, very early when we started taking original photos, I would get inspired by a Tolkien quote or something like that. So I would say, okay, let's make this quote, which is usually part of a story, into an image. And you think about it like illustrating a novel or a book where you have to show in that picture, you know, whatever, Gimli, you know, whatever, stood upon the rock and he swung his axe back and forth singing, saying Barok Khazad, Barok Khazad. And, you know, so you have to, how do we tell a story? Well, we have Gimli on the rock and we have all these orcs beneath him. And we've got the ruins of Helm's Deep behind and the moon coming through or whatever that is, so that somebody can just look at that and say, oh, I know exactly what's going on. So we took that same kind of book illustration process to our Instagram account. And honestly, that was just an outpouring of being poor and not having any sort of resources or professionalism, which was just, we can't make a film, we can't make a movie. We can't put all this stuff together. I don't have the time, energy, resources to edit that or film that or act that, but I've got 30 minutes. We can do it. We can do a photo. And it kind of just sprang from there. The business plan came about because, yes, we started picking up some steam. I think by 2015 or so, we had about 30,000 followers on Instagram, which is much more substantial back then than it is now. And that kind of gave us the attention that we needed to have, for me to have a little more confidence in kind of what we were doing. And I started getting orders and requests, people saying, could you make this for me? Can you make that for me? And I didn't have time for most of it, but one of my friends, Allison Dredge, we had followed each other on Instagram, and she was the costume designer for Devin Graham, Devin Supertramp on YouTube. And she was about to have a child and said, hey, I cannot do this project they just asked me to do, but it's Assassin's Creed, which I've seen you do a bunch of work on. So it was the Assassin's Creed Unity live action trailer. She said, can you do the costumes for this? So I did the assassins and some of the French officers for that. And then next year rolls around, they said, hey, the Assassin's Creed Syndicate is coming out. Can you do the Syndicate, you know, costumes? And so I started doing that. And so a lot of it, I've always been very much like a say yes and figure out how to do it afterwards sort of person. So we just started figuring it out. And once I had that commitment, I had something to hold me accountable to actually creating something new. So it was a lot of late nights and that sort of stuff. And then when I got medically retired from the Navy, I kind of had an option. What do I want to do with the rest of my life? And so I had this confidence because people were paying me for my work. And so I moved back to Anderson, South Carolina, moved into my parents' basement and said, I'm going to try to make this a business. And little by little, I rented a space. I kind of had this process of, well, I'm going to pretend I'm a costume design company until I'm a costume design company. So we rented a space. I got some equipment and I just started making stuff. And a lot of days there was no work. So I would just go in and just make new things for myself to practice, practice skills, to practice, to figure out new techniques, and then continue sharing those things. And little by little, we gained momentum. People started asking for more orders. So we developed our retail line and it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if you know this about me too. We kind of shared the medical retirement thing. When I was in the Marine Corps, I thought that was going to be my career path too. And I was actually the same thing. As a young guy, I got medically retired out of the Corps and didn't know exactly which path and where to go and kind of to take. But new things kind of open up, and the arts gave me an outlet to be able to kind of pursue that I didn't think I could pursue before. Cause at the time it's like, well, why not? You're young enough and foolish enough to think, hey, well, somebody's doing it. Why can't I kind of think type of thing? Yeah. When you do a picture like that, how long does it take you to kind of set things up and then to find a picture? I mean, from the look of it, you could foolishly think, oh, I bet they do that in, an hour or whatever. But how long does it take to kind of set things up and then to go through the pictures and kind of do the whole layout of what you guys have?
Yeah. So we have two main photographers that we work with. Nicholas Bruno, who's, I would say, our main photographer. He's done 90% of Fallon Fair's work. And then Lillian Liu, who is also phenomenal. She's from Canada. It takes a little more to get her here. But when we first started, it took a long time per photo. Well, actually, it took a short time because we were just kind of winging it. But then as we got better, that's when the process really just the work multiplied. And then as we got better at it, it shortened again. So we have photos that took 1, 2, 3 hours. Now, usually what we'll do is we'll go and pull all the outfits, which takes 2 hours. We get all the models out to a property, which takes, 45 minutes, an hour to drive to the property, get them geared up, takes another hour. So you're at 4 hours of work at this point. No photo has been taken. Then we'd usually go out, take 60 or 70 photos over a 3 or 4 hour shoot till everybody's exhausted and sweaty, then unpack everybody or undress everybody, go home, clean all the stuff. So you're at like 12 hours for a photo shoot. And out of that photo shoot, we may walk away with 3 to 6 photos. So usually we have like 2 to 3 concepts we go in that are just like I've vision boarded this out. Like we've got a plan, we've drawn it, we've sketched it. And then usually we'll get 2 or 3 other photos just where somebody will see something and say, hey, this is a great shot. Like, what if we put this guy down here and this person up here? And so we also have some more spur of the moment type things. And then there's other ones we've planned out completely. For example, in 2021, we did a series featuring all of our 12 different color Ranger cloaks. And so we actually drew them all out. Like, how do we show a story of a character from behind so you can't see the face? How do we show an adventure or a story with this character and all you see from behind is their cloak? And so we drew out and sketched out 12 concepts. Actually, I think we had like 14 because we wanted some alternates. And then over the course of 3 days, we shot those 12 photos. And then we got other supplemental photos in between and that sort of stuff. But a big storytelling photo, I would say, it's a 12-hour shoot, out of which you'll probably get 3 to 4 photos.
Wow. Yeah. So a lot of work leading into it. But what kind of marks for success? What's kind of the return for that? What marks it in your mind that was a successful shoot?
Well, there's multiple layers of success. So sometimes success is we got people together and we got out there and had fun. Like sometimes that's all the success you're going to get, but that's okay. That's enough. Sometimes success is Like, I would say we have like three tiers of photos. We have like our ultimately cinematic ones. Then we have our really good storytelling ones. And then we have what I would call like supplementary or behind the scenes or snapshots in the life of or in from the shoot. And so I am particularly grateful for the shoots where we end up with multiple cinematic ones, like the really top level where, you know, it looks like a Renaissance painting. And that's honestly kind of how we work it. So, you know, as you're setting this up, you need something in the foreground, you need something kind of as the subject, and you need something in the background. So you've got a triple layer thing going on. You usually need like a golden ratio sort of setup that you can line up. You want to, we shoot with a very shallow depth of field. So mm-hmm. basically everything's kind of compressed all like right there. And the things that are not in the focal area are very blurry. And all those things contribute to kind of this feeling of a fully built out world, a chaotic kind of, there's action and motion going on. Even if that action and motion is fire or smoke blowing by or a banner flapping in the wind, even if it's not other people fighting or something like that, or a sunset or something like that. So you have all of these elements that are stacked on top of each other to create something very interesting. Now, we've had some interesting pictures that are just one guy standing somewhere. But for the most part, when there's a really interesting cinematic photo, you're catching action in three phases or in three depths of field, as well as being able to focus on a few very specific, you know, a character or one or two characters interacting.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that happening. As you garner new people coming in, and you know, the name of Fel and Fair is gets further out there even now, are you seeing more productions or are people bringing you into other things, other projects currently?
It's been interesting, like I said, not the route that I anticipated. We kind of fluctuate in and out of doing a ton of media work and then kind of really backing off of it. It's a lot of kind of like you got to sell the product, then make the product, then sell the product, then make the product. And one of the things too, that as we have gotten better in some, so a lot of our favorite stuff and a lot of the things that I remember the most are the things that we produced or the things that we organized. But as we've gotten busier and, you know, we went from zero to, you know, 15 employees and all this sort of stuff, we just don't have the bandwidth. And in some ways we can't even afford ourselves. I was talking to somebody the other day saying, okay, yeah, when I was a solo artist, and, you know, I had volunteer help and that sort of stuff. But it'd be like, hey, we're going to get some beer and pizza and we're going to spend Friday and Saturday building the set piece. And it'll be fun. We'll all hang out and, you know, it'll be a good time. We'll work out 12 hours a day. It'll be take 24 hours to do it. But it'll be this fun little set piece. We'll have it for a photo to shoot on Sunday or whatever. Well, now, if I'm out there with employees and this sort of stuff, like it's going to cost me $800 just in labor to make that happen. So in some ways we've gotten so good that we can't afford ourselves anymore sometimes. So we have not been able to do as many personal projects in the last few years. Now I'm grateful because we're usually doing other work. We're either doing events or we're creating costumes for sale that are bringing in that revenue. So we are getting paid day to day because those other days we were taking off work or we were getting our work done at other times so that we could then go and do that. Right. So that has been a challenge. And then also you just have other costs when you are a large functioning business that an individual craftsman doesn't have. I mean, we've got our rent for our commercial property. We've got all sorts of insurance and, you know, those sorts of things that, you know, we're spending easily $6,000-$7,000 a month on things just to keep the company functioning before we look at materials, before we look at payroll. So, yeah. You know, so we have to make sure that we're doing paid work to make that up. But we tend to kind of see the cycle when it comes to like content creation or film stuff, where the bigger film projects that we're on, we're often either collaborating with people or we have some sort of production investment in it, or we've been brought in to one degree because we kind of bring this dual threat element where we can do the costuming, but also where we can help produce and we can provide actors and stunt people and all this sort of stuff. So we provide value on multiple fronts. Or it's things that we are doing by ourselves for other people. So we did think last year we did a ton of content creation for like Audible and Lego and several big brands like that. That was a lot of fun to be able to do those. But then, so we'll do a bunch of that. But then we got so busy with all that work, we didn't post as consistently on social media. And so our social media numbers went down. So we had fewer people asking us, hey, can you come do this? So we're kind of coming back around to the circle where we're actually starting to get a little more bandwidth, where we can create a little more content. And I'm sure that'll bump our numbers up. People will start asking us again. But that is the one downside of kind of the tyranny of social media, is that while you're doing the work, you're not posting the work, which means people forget about you. And you have to wait for all that work to come to fruition, which sometimes can take a year before you actually start getting those numbers again.
So you're really relying on the social media element really is your calling card and kind of your commercial. Obviously, we talked about Instagram. Are you out on other social media elements? And then kind of a follow-up question, if you were in it today, do you would you have a preferential social media platform that you would start out on?
Yeah. So we're on TikTok and YouTube also primarily. We're on most platforms, Facebook, Pinterest, but most of our, like 80% of our energy goes into Instagram, basically because that's where we started and that's where we got a lot of momentum early. TikTok, we've actually had huge success on TikTok, but you're very algorithm based. So you'll post a video, get 4.2 million views, and the next one will get 10,000. And yeah, you just don't, you know, you don't know. So we've got like 230,000 followers on TikTok. And I honestly don't use it as much as I should. We should spend more time and energy. And one thing I'm actually in the process, we're actually looking to hire a social media manager at this point, because it's gotten to the point where I can't manage it anymore, which is kind of amazing. But it's challenging to find somebody who can echo your tone and who has the fully rounded skill set and can work for a small business, you know, and the salaries that we have. So if I was to start it now, I kind of have a good example of this. So we just launched War of the Barons, announced it back in about 2 months ago. So mid-November. Well, we announced it in, I think, September, but basically until mid-October, we couldn't really even start doing much of it, of anything to support it. And so what we did is I basically challenged myself. So I'm going to post every day on Instagram. I haven't done a TikTok. I haven't done YouTube. I was like, I can only do so much, but we're going to do War of the Barons every day. And we've gone from zero to over 5,500 followers in the last 2.5 months on Instagram, getting a lot of good engagement. And that's a little different. It's a little less about storytelling and it's a little more about educational content, but we still try to do everything very beautifully because curating an aesthetic is what we're really good at. So we've been building a lot of momentum there. So what I would do is, if you don't have energy to go multiple platforms, I mean, I probably should have done a TikTok and a YouTube simultaneously and then cross-posted to all of those all the time. I just didn't have the energy, frankly.
Yeah.
But if that was the only thing, if that was like your new hustle that you were going to do, I would definitely do all three of those platforms, YouTube Shorts, TikTok, Instagram, and then just be consistent with putting out content. I mean, there's two types of content that do well, which is informative content and entertaining content. Fell and Fair was to a degree an entertaining content thing for a long time. It was about this beautiful images and that sort of stuff. But as we've shifted away from photography and more towards a video platform, that's we've had to change how we do that a little bit. And a lot of our, I mean, we have tens of thousands of photos that we don't really use much anymore because that's not what the algorithm demands. But we do have, you know, the ability to capture videos. We have been doing more video stuff. But with War of the Barons, we've done some beautiful inspirational stuff, but we do a lot of educational stuff. This is how 13th century life works in this area. This is how you use this sort of equipment, or this is how this outfit is worn, or these are three accessories that I would use for my kit in this scenario. And those are all just useful tools. And I think that's why we've seen success, is because people are hooked by it. They're interested. And then they can follow up and see whether or not they actually want to participate.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that, you know, we'd be almost like regressing, that you'd be going back to like a time period where you would think that stuff would be outdated and never coming back. And here it is, full circle, we're back to swords and bows and arrows. Yeah. People are finding that cool. And, you know, there's something within us that kind of longs for that battle, that, you know, holding a sword in your hand, it, yeah, you know, it matters. Yeah. Where do you see creatives and artists and even entrepreneurs in that creative artist space? Where do you see them blowing it?
But mostly just not starting or not doing anything. I mean, you have to be bad before you can be good. That's just like, if you look back at our early Felon Fair stuff, not phenomenal. It was me in the woods with an iPhone on a stand, and I was taking photos of myself. And so not great, but you've got to start. And this is where I see a lot of people, they get daunted by, and this is why, like with War of the Barons, I was like, I can't do three social media platforms, but I can do one. So I'll do the one that I know, and we'll start marching on. And there's tons of other resources too. I mean, email marketing is super important and can be utilized really well. I have not utilized it to the degree that I probably should, but it is another valuable thing. And then also, like, I'll say this, one thing that I'm learning to do is forgive myself for not being perfect and for getting tired sometimes. Because I think that younger me beat myself up or would overwork regularly. And there's times where you have to work really hard and you really have to hustle. But I actually worked one time, there's a stretch where I worked like 18 hours a day or 16 hours a day for like 6.5 months. And I messed my back up so much, I had to take 2 weeks off just completely. And I still have back issues because of that. So, you know, there's times where it can be overdone, but think of it as like the little thing. Like, what I try to think of is, what is one thing that I did to push the ball down the court today? Sometimes you get 7 things done and it's great. But like, what's one thing? Like, I'll find myself on Instagram scrolling or something, and I'll be like, wait, I'm consuming. Have I contributed any today? Have I put something out there that is helpful to people, that inspires people? And if not, then I'll scroll back through the 10,000 photos we have and I'll pick one and I'll be like, all right, I'm just going to give somebody 30 seconds on my thoughts on scabbards or whatever.
Yeah.
And so like I said, the only way that you can blow it is basically by not doing it, by thinking it's impossible, or by sitting around and waiting till tomorrow. And you know, like I said, you can go back and delete old stuff. If you look back like in a year and like, that was terrible, okay, just go delete your old content. But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, there's a saying that writers write, and a lot of people claim that they're writers and yet they haven't written anything in 10 years, you know, and it's that it's either procrastination or fear, something gets you, but you got to sit down and put butt to chair and pen to paper at some point, and writers write. And so you got to activate at some point. What do you think is something that made it possible for you to succeed?
Honestly, the community, the group of friends and people that have been around me that have supported me. You can't do the stuff in a vacuum. You've got to get people. And if you're doing something that is actually valuable, it will make people excited. And one thing I'm really bad at is asking for help. It's my ego or whatever gets in the way. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it myself. Thankfully, there's been times where I've been able to conquer that enough to go ask for help, and you know, people have been inspired enough to be willing to do stuff. But I mean, if we didn't have the amazing community of people that helps put on Weekend Warrior, that helps originally with, I mean, Nick Bruno has never taken a dime for his services, and he's taken over 10,000 Felon Fair photos.
Yeah,
wow. Because he thinks it's awesome and it's beautiful, and he loves being part of it. Most of our models and stuff are our friends, or people from Weekend Warrior, whoever, that just knows how to hold a sword. Yep. And so creating beautiful things is challenging enough if you're trying to do it by yourself. So I'd say build that community, build that team. And I think the story of my life is having the right people sent into my life at the right time. And yep. The sad and hard part of that is that means sometimes people are taken out of your life, and that's very painful. That's very hard. But that doesn't mean that they were, now sometimes you're foolish and you let bad people in, but sometimes that doesn't mean that they were the bad people all the time. It was just, there was a season where you and I were walking alongside each other. And then there's a season where we're walking differently and you need to go that way. And then somebody else is going to come along at that right time. Which, like I said, is hard and sad, but once you kind of accept that and are okay with that, then you have a little more peace about letting people go and go their own way and then having new people come. And we see this from our Weekend Warrior volunteers. We're like, I would love it if all the original Weekend Warrior volunteers were all happy and lived in a green, frolicking field and we got to do this stuff every year for the next 50 years. That's yeah. just not going to be the case. People are going to come and go, and that's all right. But it means that we need to constantly be engaging with our community to find people that can we can raise up into those spots and that we can train up and that are inspired and energetic to be doing those jobs. So,
yeah, I mean, one of the things that I appreciate about Weekend Warrior that I've seen is that I've seen people that have been there since day one, and those that have had to go and do something one year and couldn't make it. We've had a lot of people have returned. You know, we've had a lot of people come back, and that's something that I definitely appreciate that. You know, there's been a lot of sticking power.
Yeah.
So this question is one that, you know, I find fascinating and one that I don't know that I have a solid answer on. So I like asking people because I think it's an important one, particularly in the area of the arts and in filmmaking, I think of specifically can be a challenge. How do you think one finds longevity in an industry like this?
I don't think there's any sort of guaranteed formula. And I think if anybody tells you there's a guaranteed formula, then they're blind. I think that, one, I think it's being willing to sail where the wind blows to one degree. If you have this lot, I mean, you know, there's people out there that'll say, you gotta focus and you gotta lock down and you gotta, you know, like, well, maybe that worked for you, man. But a lot of people get locked into a goal and then they, you know, smash themselves to bits against a rock. It's kind of the whole, like the, you know, the oak breaks, but the willow bends sort of thing with the wind. And what I have found now, one may argue if I just sucked it up and I had worked really hard and I had done whatever and really wanted to be like a Hollywood filmmaker at this point that I could be there now. I don't know. But I just, when an opportunity sprang up, I was like, hey, that sounds good. It's within the scope of our principles and within the scope of what, how we want to impact the world. So yeah, we'll do events. We'll do retail costume sales. Cause I used to say like, I'm a costume designer for like film, but I can't really say that anymore because I do two films a year, but we sell 5,000 tunics and cloaks and that sort of stuff to normal people.
Yeah.
So, it's a different feel. And So you see this all the time. Like I've got plenty of buddies who want, you know, they got into the industry because they saw, you know, Drive or they saw some, you know, really great movie. And then most of their time though, is they make commercials because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
Right. But they can still make the best commercials they can. And they get to play with cameras every day and they get to do cool stuff. And then twice a year they get to make fun indie films.
Right.
And so, you know, that's not a bad thing. I think people see that often as like failing or as, you know, if you start off and you want to be a, you know, I don't know if you want to be an automotive manufacturer, but then you find out the motorcycles are the way to go or whatever, like then just shift and enjoy it. You're manufacturing something, you're working with steel, you're yeah. helping people get from point A to point, you know, B. I think there's a lot of brands that people haven't read Simon Sinek's Start With Why. That's a very, very powerful and important book that I would say is very definitive in Fel and Fair's thing. And so we always, whenever we're looking at a project, we say, is this in line with our why? And our Fel and Fair's why is our goal is to inspire people with joy by telling stories and helping them tell stories. So when we looked at the idea for, we acquired a cosplay wig company a couple of years ago called Pose Wigs that we've integrated into the Fel and Fair family. And we asked ourselves, is providing cosplay wigs part of inspiring people with joy by telling stories and helping them tell stories? We said, yes, it is, because this brand helps people better tell their stories in a way in the hair format, right? Weekend Warrior, does this help inspire people with joy? Now, if it didn't inspire people with joy or it didn't, you know, help them tell stories or tell good stories itself, then we're not going to do it. So we've turned down, like we turn down offers all the time from sponsors and stuff that aren't aligned with our why, or for, you know, projects that aren't aligned with our why. And I'm willing to sit back and not take those projects waiting for the right thing to come along. So as long as the thing is in line with your why, I think the what matters a lot less, as long as you have the physical capabilities of doing it. But, you know, so when you're a costume company for film and then you start making stuff for LARPs, then you start hosting live action events, that's a natural thing, even if that means you're distracted sometimes and you can't do the big Hollywood films. But that's okay. I mean, I get to make cool stuff, and there's still plenty of times a year that I get to sit behind a camera and watch the amazing things happening on screen. And there's still people, I mean, there's hundreds of thousands and even millions of people a month that see what we do, which is far more people than, you know, watch movies even 40 years ago when a movie would come out. So
yeah,
we're able to still impact people in a major way, even if it's not in the format we originally intended.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had to talk through some filmmakers off the ledge about the responsibility of the 9-to-5 and just paying the bills. Yeah. That does not equate to failure. That equates to responsibility. You know, I'm married with 5 little ones. I have a responsibility to this family to provide for them. Doesn't mean me having a 9-to-5 means it's failure. It means that my responsibility shifts there, and I'm still able to work on screenplays and do film as often as I can. And in those areas, I find joy, but I have joy in other areas as well that I didn't expect.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, honestly, I mean, yes, my 9-to-5 is at Fell and Fair, but like next week I have 18 meetings scheduled, 18 1-hour meetings, because it's our quarterly check-ins with all the employees, and it's, you know, planning stuff for the quarter and talking with the accountant. Like, that's not running around the woods with a camera or with a sword or in a cloak. Like, that's just the same as anybody else's meetings.
Right.
Now, I'm grateful that I do still get a lot of those opportunities, but I think a lot of people think that they see us through the Fell and Fair lens and think we just run around in medieval costumes and sword fight each other all the time.
Yeah.
Which is just not the case.
Yeah. No, you're very entrepreneurially driven and have to be in order to be able to continue to do that.
No.
With you trying to, you know, one of the things that you do desire, though, is to be, you know, to do film stuff as often as you can. And do you find it being a challenge not living in LA? Was that ever on the table? Was there a pull to ever go to LA?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I kind of made the choice when I got out of the Navy. I was like, do I want to go be a very small fish in a very big pond, or do I want to be a very big fish in a small pond? And with the vision that I had and that sort of stuff, I was like, big fish, small pond, and let's figure it out. And it is a challenge. My brother lives in LA. I've been out to visit him. And like, things, just creativity just bubbles in the streets there. Like, yeah, you just meet people. And so I don't have that. But I've been able to engage with people that are part of that community. I've recently been taking a bunch of acting classes, actually, or several acting classes through the Warner Laughlin School, which is in LA. Stephen Van Dorn, who's a instructor there, actually is a player at Weekend Warrior, and he reached out and was like, hey, you may find this interesting. And so he kind of scooped me into their curriculum, and that's been a real way for me over the last year to really re-inspire myself around filmmaking. So that's the other thing, is you, even while you're doing your work, you have to find ways constantly to inspire yourself and to energize yourself and to improve yourself. Also, I mean, you read all the stories. I mean, Harrison Ford was like 35 or something like that, and he was a carpenter when he was found to be, you know, Han Solo. So there's plenty of stuff where, like, we want everything now. Like, I was literally having a conversation with somebody today of like, I want all of this right now, and I think I deserve it right now, but I don't have it right now. So am I okay with that? And can I live with that? And that can be challenging, but I found that, being able to connect with people where we can, and taking the opportunities that are presented with us, I think is just kind of the way you have to go. And like I said, in these classes, as I talk to my friends in the classes, and, you know, we have all these conversations because they're all SAG and they're all, you know, part of this stuff. Some of them are in LA, some aren't. Some of them are in LA and work twice a year. Some of them are in Maine and work multiple times, you know, more than that. Some are in Chicago and just do a bunch of plays. So they're all pursuing opportunities wherever those, you know, those come. And just, you know, LA, yeah, there's a lot more opportunity, but there's a lot more competition too. So it really determines on, like, it depends on what you want to do and what you want to be.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. You know, I tell people quite often when they're looking for actors, I was like, just go to your local theater. Trust me, some of the best talent I've ever seen is right around the corner at your local community theater. There's people are phenomenally talented, and you'll miss out if you don't check them out.
Yeah.
You've already mentioned one book, but do you have, I know you're well-read. I think of our mutual friend, Errol Avellino. We both challenge each other to read. You know, we're both into big self-help books and entrepreneurial books.
Yeah.
Do you have any books that you would recommend to entrepreneurs and artists and creatives?
Yeah, absolutely. So Simon Sinek, Start With Why, absolutely. If you are on the entrepreneur or business side, anything by Mike Michalowicz, Profit First, The Pumpkin Plan, really, really helpful for structuring a business and learning kind of how to, because I kind of, I always said that I was an artist who just kind of had to figure out how to run a business. And I read a book recently by a fellow named, I forget his name, but anyway, he wrote a book called Mad Genius. And it's about basically how being an entrepreneur, you have to be an artist. I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Cause this is always, he said, it's not a contradiction. It's not your fault. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, which most filmmakers and actors are to a degree entrepreneurs, yeah. They're figuring out their brand, they're building that sort of stuff.
No.
So that's like kind of on the professional side. On the more personal side, I think because yeah, I agree that forging yourself is just as important as building the structure of the business and that sort of stuff. Verbal Judo is actually a really good one. I forget the guy's name that wrote it, but it was written for cops actually, is like how to basically resolve situations without violence. Very, very important for, man, I wish I had that years before with dealing with customers and dealing with employees that were their conflict. There's a book by, I think it's Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep. It's all about sleep and why it's important. So just on a personal level, that was a huge life changer for me and my creative system by basically understanding how to sleep properly so that I could continue to burn at the rate that I was burning. And then another one, and this is probably one of the largest tools I have in self-awareness, is a book by Ian Morgan Cron called The Road Back to You, which is about the Enneagram. Like many things, the Enneagram was taken and it was turned into voodoo, mojo, jojo. I disagree with all that stuff, but as a psychological framework for kind of understanding yourself and your motivations based on your past experiences, I find it very, very helpful. And I learn more about myself and how I work and what motivates me than about anything else. So that one was, I think, a huge stepping stone for me developing myself personally so that I could kind of get out of my own way. And yeah, so that was really powerful.
Yeah, no, all those are good. I actually took a class from the guy that wrote Verbal Judo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was outstanding. I still use it. I definitely would second that. It's much more than just cop stuff. I use it all the time. I use it on my kids. I Verbal Judo them. Boom.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah.
What is an important thing that you would tell an aspiring creative or entrepreneur?
There's two. One is you just got, like I said earlier, you just got to start. You just put yourself out there and be okay with failing in that at the beginning. The second is you're going to have to be okay with people not liking your stuff. Like you're going to have to be okay, not just with failing, but with people being really pissed at you.
Yeah.
Like really upset. Like, it's been said before, and I have to constantly remind myself that you're never going to accomplish anything in the world without frustrating or without getting people mad at you, without turning people off. It's a challenge. It's frustrating because I'll go and look at like our feedback and our reviews on like Etsy and some other stuff occasionally. And I'll see, you know, it'll be 100 5-star reviews. It's the best thing I ever had. Then there'll be that 1 5-star of like this cheap material. I can't believe they charge this much for it. And then I get all bent out of shape about that one. There's, 100 people a thousand people that didn't even take time to leave the review because it was, they were fine with it. 100 people that liked it so much, they came back and left a 5-star review, and that one jerk that didn't like it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. There's people that come to Weekend Warrior that it's, to them, it's not worth coming back. It's, they don't enjoy it. That's okay. Like, yeah. I'm okay with the 97% of people that love it. And, you know, the 60% of people that are willing to, you know, do a lot of work to come back every year. Yep. Then, you know, trying to make sure, because as soon as you try to please everybody, you make a really shitty project. Like, you just, that's not worth anything if you try to please everybody. So we've had to, that's actually a lot of what we're doing now with our Hearthlands event and War of the Barons. We're saying, hey, this is a more niche event. Like, this is going to be less appealing to the broad audience, but to the people who it is appealing to, it is going to be very appealing. So, and we're okay with not everybody thinking it's all amazing.
Yeah. No, I, the moment you throw something out there, particularly creative, you're going to get people that have opinions, and people are going to be strongly opinionated about it. Just put something out on YouTube and you'll see.
Yeah.
And you have to get thick skin and let it roll water off a duck's back.
And that's not to say you can't learn from criticism.
Yeah.
You know, like, good. Definitely you should still be listening, and you should, but it's having the wisdom to filter, hey, this is legitimate criticism that I can actually do better on. And this is just somebody blowing hot steam, and it's something I can kind of let roll off.
I think that's a good, actually good clarity delineation point, because a lot of people will dismiss it altogether and not hear the truth and the honest critique and criticism, yeah, and not take a point of correction when perhaps they should.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people do that. They dismiss it, and I'm over here thinking, well, maybe you should listen to that a little,
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. It's finding that point of, is this person, like, basically, if you are being true to your vision, are they criticizing your vision, or are they criticizing your execution of your vision? Like, if
yeah,
you, and like, we've found that a couple of times, we're like, no, this person, they're not being a jerk. They really understand where we're trying to go, and they're trying to help us get there better. And yep, then there's other people where it's like, well, we're serving tacos and they want pizza. Like, they're never going to be happy. And like, what the recipe they just gave for us is Taco Bell's Mexican pizza, but that's not what we do. Like, yeah, we do tacos. So they're, yep, just going to have to, we're going to have to be okay with them not liking that.
Exactly. No, it's definitely a good analogy. So what are you working on next, and where can people find you to see what,
yeah,
you
want? So events wise, War of the Barons is coming up at the end of February. Super excited for that. Been able to create a ton of fun content around that, as well as just building out the ideas for the event. I think it's going to be really amazing. Film wise and stuff, we have a couple things kind of in the works, a big project I'm hoping to announce soon that we're trying to produce ourselves. Just kind of my next, I've kind of recharged over the last year and have some energy to actually launch into some stuff. And then social media at Felon Fair, at felonfair.shop for the costumes, at Weekend Warrior Experience. And these are on most platforms as well. Weekend Warrior Experience for the events, War of the Barons, the Hearthlands. We have like 14 Instagram accounts so that we can hit all our niches, but you can get to everything from Felon Fair or felonfair.com.
Awesome. Well, can you think of anything that I might've missed?
Let me think. I mean, I feel like we've pretty broadly covered this. I think the key thing, I'll close with this. Somebody, I was looking at getting some help on one of the events recently, and I kind of laid out the situation of the plan and the concept to this gentleman I was talking to. And he said, okay, well, like, this seems pretty straightforward. It seems like a really good concept. It seems like it's something a lot of people are excited about. Why is everybody not doing one of the events? Like, why are there not 500 of these things? I was like, well, for one, we have a warehouse full of about $100,000 worth of costumes that we can just equip everybody with. That helps a lot. But two, that can be gotten around. Two is, honestly, we've just been stubborn enough. Like, we've just had the stick-to-itiveness and just the tenacity to no matter what, keep pushing forward, because, yeah, we have had... So, I mean, you've walked through a lot of it with me, Ron. Like, I have more gray hairs and I've lost more years off of my life because of Weekend Warrior than anything else in my life.
Yeah.
And there were so many, And it's like what Samwise Gamgee says in The Return of the King, you know, like talk about the great stories. Like, what's the difference in the great stories? Well, the people had so many opportunities to turn back, but they didn't. They kept going because what they believed in was more important than the momentary comfort that they could have. And I think that's been our story with Weekend Warrior. And if you really have a beautiful vision that's inspiring, that brings joy to people, then you have to have that tenacity. You have to have that stick-to-itiveness and just sometimes bullheaded stubbornness to just keep pushing forward, even when, you know, the obstacles or whatever. And you know what? I'll say this too. You know what? If it's not worth it, that's okay. And you can walk away and live a happy and fulfilled life. And you don't have to be the guy that loses years off of your life because players are upset or because, you know, whatever. Like, it's that's also okay too. But if you do have that passionate thing that you do want to see fulfilled eventually, you just got to be stubborn sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the moment I saw people started getting tattoos of, like, you know, the shields and stuff and the flags and stuff that we had come up with for Weekend Warrior, and friendships that I've developed where I was talking to people outside of Weekend Warrior that I've created true friendships from, I knew that we were onto something beyond just, we were meeting a need that society, the further we have gotten apart from each other, the more that we all need each other. And we need this. It's more than just connecting over the internet. We need this communal coming together, and it's important, and it's validating and invigorating. And it's, in fact, I would even say it's essential. So it's a strong outlet for many that I know many do appreciate and do find fulfilling. Well, Zan, I appreciate your time, man. Hopefully everybody that was listening in wrote down as many nuggets as I was kind of writing down as well and taking notes. There's a lot of good information that one could take away from, and definitely appreciate and trying to learn that we can take what you've been through and take the ball from here and move it forward downfield. And definitely appreciate you sharing a lot of good information there. If you are just hearing about Fallon Fair, please do go check them out, reach out and check them out on Etsy, and you can see what they are selling and been up to. And if you have any collaboration ideas, I'm sure Zane would be up to hearing. You can reach out to him through his social media platforms. All right, everyone, until next time, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.